sitting right over the peak or something. So there's just all kinds of different ways of experiencing the landscape, and some will be gifts like that was, and some you will calculate and come away with something good, and some you'll calculate and hey, it didn't work out, but that's life, right? And you don't have to show it necessarily to anyone. It just sort of deepens your own appreciation, which is a totally valid and valuable thing to do.
Absolutely. This has been so fun to speak with you. I just really encourage listeners to check out Between Worlds, and it's opening at the Misty Rivers Gallery in New Hazleton on November 1st. So check it out in November. And if you want to hear Graham Pohl, the photographer who I'm speaking to right now, if you want to hear him speak on the topic, make sure that you're there on November 7th for the grand opening.
Thank you.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook.
And you're going to have to make your plans right away if you want to get there for that lecture later this week. I hope you enjoyed that talk. I'm a photographer myself, and it's always interesting to hear photographers and other creative people talk about their process and their experience with the work they do. It is 10:30 here at, well, at CJSF 90.1 FM, but of course, throughout our time zone as well. I hope you, adjusted all your clocks on the weekend and, enjoyed your extra hour of time. Fun Drive was last week. We did our Fun Drive show here last Monday and it ran until, last night, and our grand total, for the drive so far was just over $6,900. Pretty good. Thanks to all the folks who made a donation to this year's fund drive. I will remind you that if you were thinking about it and you haven't made a donation yet, you still can. Go to cgsf.ca/donate and you can make a donation through our online donation form there. It's pretty normal for donations to roll in throughout this week. So why don't you join in on that and head over to the page www.cgsf.ca/donate and make a donation. And if you already did that, thank you so much. We really appreciate your support. It's really important to us here at CJSF. All the programmers and volunteers who put in so much time over the year really appreciate your support when you step up and show that you appreciate what we're doing throughout the year. So thank you for that. Coming up now is we're going to bring you some Bird Note. Peter will be up just after at the end of the show.
We're going to tell you a bit about the Vancouver South African Film Festival, but I'm also going to tell a bit of information about South Africa and the history of it.
Great. And of course, Bird Note next, and then we'll be doing Gardening with Embark.
This is Bird Note. Because of invasive species and climate change, many of the native birds of Hawaii are endangered or have gone extinct. Sam Ohugan, senior scientist and cultural advisor for the Nature Conservancy of Hawaii, says the i'iwi holds a special place in native Hawaiian culture. The bright red honeycreeper is a symbol of royalty, both metaphorically and literally.
The i'iwi was the bird that provided the scarlet, the brilliant red of Hawaiian featherwork. And so because the i'iwi is the last extant Hawaiian featherwork bird, it is the last living connection to that huge part of Hawaiian culture. It's almost unthinkable to me that the i'iwi should be allowed to go extinct. Because then we would read about Hawaiian featherwork and how spectacular it was and would all be historical and all be in the past. No living reminder of those times. It always lifts me to experience them in native forest. Their calls take me hundreds of years into the past, into a time of abundance. Hawaiians speak of pilina, which is connection. These birds, they connect us to our ancestors and to our place. That, to me, is definitely worth protecting.
Sam's work tries to bridge traditional Hawaiian knowledge with conservation to ensure birds like the i'iwi stay with us. Learn more at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill.
Welcome to Gardening with Embark. And joining me here in the studio is Pablo Vimas, Gardens Manager for Embark Sustainability Society.
Nice to be here. Yeah.
So we are coming to the end of the growing season.
Correct. So at the beginning, we said that week 45 is the deadline, yeah. As the frost will be closing, the first time we have frost. So yeah, week 45, we've been over the last few weeks slowly tidying up the garden, harvesting whatever it needs, planting cold crops, and yeah, now it's time to have your garden beds, your garden put to bed for the winter.
Yeah, and the gardener gets a rest as well.
Yes, we this has been very busy with these heavy rainfalls. During the last 2 weeks, and so just making sure that the hoop houses still hold, that everything is tight, secure, so the wind storm don't pick up the hoop houses and makes into a kite, and as well finding all those spots in the garden that get completely flooded because of the accumulation of water.
So it's been a busy year. We started this conversation way back in, I think it was week 16.
Correct.
And so we've been through most of the whole cycle of the year, not entirely, but we've sort of we started out back in the fall, or not the fall, the spring.
Spring.
You know, talking about getting the having gotten the plants just in the ground, the ones we'd started earlier in the season, as seedlings.
Correct. Yes. So yeah, we started 3 weeks after the last frost, which was at the beginning of April. And then we were quite excited about how the summer was going to be, and it happens that it was a very short and hot summer. And then later we talk about not having tomatoes, not having zucchini, the summer crops kind of very slow growing. On the contrary, all the cool crops, broccoli, cauliflower, lettuces, they were doing fantastic. So so that's an experience for now that we can summarize. This year, we did, was not a summer crops year, but we had a good run from cold crops. As well, now we've been, yesterday I've been looking at the seeds that we have ordered early in the January, which of those seeds are the, or the varieties that we have ordered produce very well. So for instance, the Green Forest for broccoli, that is an excellent variety that I will be ordering for next year.
And so now that we're sort of, we're getting last, I guess, the last sort of things we're growing harvested before the frost. Because once the frost hits, that's it. The plants are...
So there are plants like lettuces that, and spinach that they don't stand very well the first frost. So with a light frost, minus two, they are already done. And then we have other crops like a kale, leeks, collards, and they stand a bit more cold temperatures. So yeah, so we start harvesting all those crops that we know stand at first frost.
And then once that frost comes, things really quiet down in the garden.
The soil becomes too cold to handle, and even too cold to dig in. So yeah, so it's just let it be. And if you have an open bed, it means that it's not covered with a hoop house, it's saturated with water. So just anything below zero, all the water turns into ice. And yeah, that's it. The season is done.
So although things are getting quieter, what are things over the next 2 or 3 months, you know, as we head into sort of winter weather that the gardener needs to be thinking of?
So if you have managed to put mulch or leaves on top of your garden bed, you make sure that that is still stays in there, as the wind storms will come and take it off those leaves. So you have to find a way how to con- keep the soil protected. In our case, we have lots of hoop houses in our garden, so each garden bed has a hoop house. Our maintenance is over the winter to open up those hoop houses, or we call venting.
Yeah.
So when the day is sunny and warm, we say around 10 degrees,
yeah,
we need the to open those hoop houses so the air changes and vents. Yeah. And the other is make sure that the garden visitors, if they, sometimes we have garden visitors, they are so eager and touch the plastic, put holes in the plastic, so we need to mend that. So we, yep, have always with us a roll of duct tape to fix those, yep, holes, because we want to have the plastic in a completely so water doesn't seep, or because of the wind getting in that hole, suddenly everything starts ripping up. So, and then, yes, keep tidy, keep making sure that everything is growing. You know, once temperature drops below 10 degrees,
mm-hmm,
plants kind of stop growing. Yeah. Plants will stay in a dormant state. They won't put more increase in stature. But they will be just standing there kind of dormant.
Waiting for the warmth to come back.
Yes, yes. And that is what we look forward when we have hoop houses. Once the temperature increases above 10 degrees, all these plants that were kind of dormant immediately get active and start developing faster.
Yeah. So we're in week 44, and the frost we've talked about is expected to come next week in week 45.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're going to be taking a bit of a break because things are quieting down in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, yeah. And, but we'll be continuing to chat a little bit, but not every week, and then we'll... you know, be back in the new year at some point when things start to heat up in the garden.
Correct. So, as you mentioned, the activity in the garden suddenly slows down. November, December is like a... December, we have the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Once the winter solstice passes, after the 22nd of December, our mind goes into ordering seeds.
Right.
We need to start with the catalogs, reading, learning about that, and placing our order for seeds. So by the beginning of February, we have our seeds, and we can start by mid-February, at the end of February, seeds indoors.
Right. So with the new year, you start thinking about and planning for your garden for the next year, and what you want to do and what you need to start getting ready.
Yes. So as a gardener here in Bark Sustainability, week five of the year is the start of the season with indoor planting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I've loved having these conversations this year, and I personally learned a lot about gardening, and I hope our listeners out there have as well.
I hope.
And sorry.
I'm happy to come here and share some of my experiences with the gardening, and some of the tips of what we do in the garden here in Embark Sustainability.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability, Gardens Manager. Like I say, we're taking a little break, so we won't be back next week, but we'll be checking in a little bit during the cool weather, and then we'll be back to telling you more about when the new gardening season kicks off in the new year. Thank you so much. Tell us a bit about how people can find out about Embark and its programs.
Yeah, Embark Sustainability is a nonprofit organization based in SFU Burnaby campus. We serve to the whole SFU community, and you can find any information about us at embarksustainability.org or through our social channels, hashtag embarksustainability.
Great. Thank you so much, Pablo.
Thank you. See you next. Bye-bye.
And thanks to Pablo Vimas for coming on the air every week as part of our weekly gardening segment. Of course, you can look outside at the weather today and see why we're going to be taking a break for a few months. But we will be checking in once a month or so because while the weekly and daily tasks are sort of coming to an end for this growing season, there's planning and thinking about your garden for the year ahead and still some things to do and get ready for. Once again, thanks very much to Pablo Vimas and Embark Sustainability Society, both for coming on the radio here, but also for their work they do on the campus promoting sustainability, their gardening program, which Pablo runs and offers an opportunity for students and others to get involved and learn a whole lot more about growing your own food with your own hands, which is an amazing thing to do. So thanks for that. We'll be back in just a couple moments with Peter R.H. and the South African Film Festival.
We appreciate your generosity. Each year, for a week, we host Fund Drive, our annual fundraising campaign that augments our budget and supports our operations. Thank you for being radio's best friend.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Okay.
All right, Peter.
All right. So there's going to be a Vancouver South African Film Festival, November 7th to 17th. And there, it's going to be at the SFU Arts thing, which is at it's on Hastings Street, where the Woodwards Project is. It's close to Victory Square is where they're going to have it. There's a few reasons why I think South Africa is important. One is that they're part of the BRICS nations, and BRICS is they make a word out of the first a letter. So it, yeah, the BRICS,
Brazil, Russia,
India,
China.
BRIC. No, yeah, that's correct. And also South Africa is the S.
Yeah.
So. And one thing was that they've been given a debt. When they were under apartheid, the apartheid regime knew that it was going to end eventually. And so they just rang up a debt. Now, the question of the debt is a bit – I have something on my tablet here, which I'm going to get to. But what I have on my tablet right now is Elon Musk – he was raised in South Africa, and he didn't have a good time there. Now, what they had in this was for the white minority. For the white minority, the children were sent to a camp every year, and the children were each given a small ration of food and water, and they were allowed and even encouraged to fight over it. And, Alan lost 10 pounds during his first stint there. And they divided them into two groups and told to attack each other. And then they actually had children who died, and all what the counselor would say, don't be so stupid and be like the ones with the previous years who died. So that's kind of nasty stuff. I mean, it's interesting that it wasn't even good to be white there in many ways. As of 2021-22, total South African government debt was $130 billion. The country's debt-to-GNP ratio in October 2020 was calculated at 82.76% of GNP. But what does that mean?
National Product.
Yeah. It's actually GDP. They're saying here.
I think that one's gross domestic product. I'm not sure. I forget the difference between the two.
I don't know. It could have over the years kind of snowballed from the original one because they have a 1985 number. The final payment Oh, this is interesting. The final payment of the $6.89 billion of the $13.6 billion 1985 debt was made by the South African government in 2001. It seems to be a bit of a complexity. I was doing my best to sort of get it. But what I would say is that they should have been given an amount to start out with, which is sort of what Germany and Japan got, I assume, you know, after World War II.
You mean at the end of apartheid,
yes,
be given some support that they didn't have to pay back to help set them up for where they needed to get to? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I think should have happened. But they didn't. They were given a debt instead. And yeah. It may have been a smaller amount than what... I mean, there's certain circumstances. I mean, they didn't even get, I think, a chance to get a footing in, mm-hmm. It seems to me. Germany and Japan lost the war, but they got all this support. I presume the reason that Germany and Japan got that support was really because of the Cold War, when you think about it.
I think, you know, the Cold War was part of... You know, the powers at the end of the war realized that, you know, defeating Germany in the First World War and then saddling it with a huge amount of debt only led to a great deal of bitterness within the country and, you know, created the conditions for the rise of fascism and whatnot. And I think they wanted to do a different strategy and not create a situation where the Germans, having lost the Second World War and same with the Japanese, you know, spent a generation, you know, struggling under the burden of hardship and being really bitter and angry at other countries about it. Because that sort of seems to be what happened in Germany after the First World War.
Yeah, well, that I know. But because it's sort of interesting. Mind you, a few years after World War II, Germany was in rough shape, yeah. Really rough shape. It's quite shocking. They have some color footage of what I've seen that was just really bad.
Yeah. And so I'm sure that you know, you're right. It's also, I think the Cold War was also part of it, and they wanted both these countries to be part of the Western arsenal and not something we needed to be worrying about, right, in terms of the competition with, you know, the Soviets in Russia.
Well, we should, and also by the end of the Cold War, there should have been a lot of support in 1992 for the former Soviet Union, which wasn't really given, I don't think. I mean, one concept I sort of have is that what they could have done was say, we'll give you so much infrastructure support, but you take away the atomic weaponry. I mean, that could have been a good switch. Mm-hmm. But I guess that didn't happen.
So let's get back to the South African Film Festival. It's actually happening all across Canada this month because it's largely a virtual festival. There is an in-person event this Thursday evening, an in-person screening of the film Music Is My Life, which is at 6:30, followed by a gala reception. And then there's a whole virtual festival of film screenings that are happening throughout that period. A lot of them are scheduled, you know, so it's not just, it's not like Netflix or something where you can just go and do it every time. There's a number of films that are happening. And you can find out a lot more information about it at saffcanada.ca, which is the South African Film Festival Canada.ca. It takes place November 7th to 17th. Have you checked out the schedule and have you picked out something you want to watch?
I tend to, like, I actually attended... last year, I just saw one film.
Yeah.
But I was, for very light volunteering, I've done 2 years seeing it. And I just find it an overallly good program.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of, they have, they had a documentary, I remember, that was about, this was a few years ago, about a white person who was doing terrorist attacks against apartheid in South Africa. and his sort of what happened, his trial and so on. So that was an interesting one that comes to mind. One of the interesting facts about South Africa is that they all speak more than one language. Like they go in and out of the Afrikaner, or maybe that I'm saying it
Afrikaans?
Wrong.
Yeah.
No, but they sort of go in and out of certain of languages. That was an interesting thing to know. But I'd like to bring up when apartheid was still existing, here even in Vancouver, there was a local broadcaster named Pat Burns. You remember Pat Burns, Magnus?
I don't.
Oh, no, Pat Burns was pretty bad.
Where did he – what station was he on?
CJOR.
Okay.
Close to our little thing.
Yeah, so one of the – it was like a news and talk station?
CGOR at one time was like open lines kind of thing. And, okay, let me tell you, you can go on YouTube and hear the past shows from the 80s. And this was from the late 80s. Pat Burns goes, oh, he said that what the Japanese had sort of been critical of South Africa and their apartheid regime. Mm-hmm. And then he says, well, if you want to immigrate over to Japan, you can't become a full citizen and you can't and he was starting saying, oh, who are they to be critical? No, to me that was because I know that he was part, and this wasn't said in the media, but he was part of a rally in the late 80s that was for apartheid, for South Africa to remain apartheid. So we had people in Vancouver, and they didn't come out with it in a very direct way. Pat Burns was an example of someone who finally, I think, people in charge of certain media in Vancouver knew what he was up to, but they never publicly said, why isn't he got a show anymore? But his rationale is saying, well, because the Japanese don't allow, you know, when you immigrate, you can't become a citizen, all that. But the real issue is, at least, you don't have to be perfect. I mean, apartheid was so bad, it was good to have a coalition of certain countries that were saying that apartheid happened to be wrong. Mm-hmm. And he was really, in a sense, showing he was for apartheid, if you really kind of analyze what his statements were.
Yep.
So, and Doug Collins also, he wound up being in the North Shore.
I remember that guy, at least the reports about him, a columnist and opinion guy with some pretty unpleasant opinions.
Well, he was sort of more towards Holocaust denial and so on, which Pat Burns was part of too, not on the air. But Doug Collins was also so we had in Vancouver, we had a lot of these reactionaries who were very much for apartheid.
And you know, I think we still have folks like that today in one way or another. You know, they're always around, and they, you know, different topics and different ideas, but you know, the same kind of, for lack of a better term, hate.
Well, I'm just saying, putting the background that at the time, it was, I mean, some people may have been surprised that apartheid ended as soon as it did as such.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I kind of forgot to bring up was that Nelson Mandela, I don't totally, what happened was that he felt that a lot of the West countries weren't supporting him. And he was more in support of, like, Castro and Venezuela than I would be. But I think he was in an actual emotional state that I would intellectually disagree with him on a number of things. But I think he was in prison for a long time, and he just didn't see a lot of the developed world was backing him up. So I would find room to disagree with him, but it's still good what he did.
Oh, of course. All right. Well, that's our program for today. Thanks for tuning in to Speak Up. Speak Up will be back at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, with starting with a segment on our Words and Culture series, talking about the Inuit language in Nuktituk. And that's pretty interesting, plus some other new segments. And Intravenous on Wednesday, and again back on Thursday. Stay tuned for